जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपागतं मह्यं ददाति स्वापदाम्बिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवंश श्रीरूपं साव्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथं वितं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखांश हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कान्ता राधा कान्ता नमोस्तुते तप्तकाञ्चन गौरङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी ऋषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रष्टाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे या गरिमा मतजी एंड प्रभा मतजी आर इन द फोन सो वी हैव 1 2 5 7 इंक्लूडिंग मी 8 So we'll just review what we covered last class. Last to last class, 2 weeks, right? Krishna is describing his relationship with the material nature, right? Like how is he related? So we did from verse number 7, right? 4 to 8. So we'll just briefly summarize. Is it light enough or you want more light? Okay. Text number 4. Krishna is saying by his unmanifested form the entire universe is pervaded. So what is his unmanifested form? Impersonal Brahman. Yabha is Brahman. And he is saying all beings are in him but I am not in them. What does it mean I am not in them? Is it not he? Basically, he is not lost. He still maintains his own identity. Okay?
Two examples of Lord. I mean, even though the logos of his name is everywhere, he is separate. The other one is the father creates the children, but the father is not lost.
Very good. Yeah. Very nice.
He is present in kingdom.
Yes. That's the example Srila Prabhupada gives in the purport. Yeah. Then, text number 5. So why Krishna is saying that everything is created does not rest in me. What does it mean?
That means his energy supports everything.
Not he personally supports. Okay. He is not the weightlifter, right? Like, Atlas example is there. So he is maintaining all the living entities. I am everywhere. But still, he is not part of this cosmic creation. Text number 6, he gives example to understand these two principles. Like, you know, how he is the source, but still he is not, influenced by it. So that's an analogy of text number 6, wind and the sky. So what is compared to what? Wind is compared to?
Sky is compared to Krishna. Wind is compared to the
cosmic
material energy. Yeah, then how do we explain what happens?
No matter what happens and the wind moves around, the sky is completely unaffected by the motions of the wind.
So similarly?
Similarly, Krishna is completely aloof is whatever goes on in the
material and
kingdom.
At the same time, wind is bound by the sky.
It
go beyond the sky. Similarly, material energy is always under his control. Okay, like that. So then text number 7. He is talking about again, you know, the creation and annihilation, which happens after every millennium. So then again the, you know, lifetime of Brahma, and at the end of his life there will be devastation when everything gets merged into Mahavishnu. He is saying by his potency they create and his potency it gets annihilated. Text number 8. Then here we talked about the analogy of scorpion and the eggs. Or maybe earlier. Who knows that?
Sixth one.
Who knows that analogy?
Like scorpion lays eggs in the rice, and that these materialistic people, they think that rice is laying eggs.
Or giving birth to scorpion.
In the same way, this material energy looks like it's producing and it's creating everything, but it is actually created and
seed. Seed is given by the Lord.
Mm.
The seed, the soul is given by the Lord. So the seeds are laid by the scorpion in the rice. Okay, so text number 8, Krishna declares how, you know, how it's happening actually, because of his will. Whole cosmic model is under me, under my will it's automatically manifested again and again, under my will it's annihilated then. So it happens because of will. So we talked about Krishna's desire makes it happen. Similarly, we talked about the role of desire of a living entity. How because of the desire we are now in this perverted material world. We talked about this material energy as a reflection of the whole existence as a reflection on the water called desire, right? The perverted banyan tree, we talked about that. So similarly, if we also strongly desire, things will happen. That's what we talked about, you know, if our desire is pure and desire is strong and desire is selfless, then it can also manifest. It's not like we have to wait many years for the desire to get fulfilled. If it's pure and it's for Krishna's service, it will automatically get fulfilled. So then text number 9. Okay, so we have to cover from today's section, text number 9. So text number 9. So the context or connection between the verses is, so then all these activities Krishna is involving in this creation and annihilation, right? So the question is, do these activities bind Krishna? No, does he get any reaction? Because he is creating and so-called he is annihilating, right? He is doing some work. So does it create any, basically he is doing action. Does he get a reaction? So he is answering text number 9, how he is not affected by that. Nacha mamtani karmani nibadnati dananjaya udasinavad asinam asaktam teshu karmashu. O Dananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as a neutral. So he is saying he is not bound by this work because he is ever detached from this material activities, seated as a neutral. So being neutral, he is detached. So he is not expecting a particular outcome. So the point here is, you know, Prabhupada also explains in the purport, the point is, like for example, even we talked about Nishkama Karma Yoga, right? Earlier, that a detached worker, even though he is in the material world, he is doing activities, he is not affected by reaction. That means, you know, it's the consciousness with which we work. So similarly, because Krishna is detached, he doesn't want a particular outcome, he is not seeking anything from this world, he doesn't get any reaction. So this phrase, I was recollecting this phrase, and suddenly I noted down, it was in the verse related to this verse which was spoken earlier. So 3.22 verse, Krishna says the same thing.
King not bound by his laws.
Yeah, like that also, 3.22. No, translation we'll read. Translation is, O son of Partha, there is no work prescribed for me within all three planetary systems, nor am I in want of anything, nor I have in need to obtain anything, and yet I am engaged in prescribed duties. So Krishna is saying, I don't seek anything, I don't need anything from this world, but still I do duties because I have to set an example. Otherwise, everybody will follow my example. So if you read last paragraph, I want to take a note at a particular phrase. In the last paragraph, third line. Third line, I will read. One who must receive the results of work has some designated duty, but one who has nothing to achieve within the three planetary systems certainly has no duty. And yet Lord Krishna is engaged. So basically, Krishna has nothing to achieve within these three planetary systems. Therefore, he doesn't get any reaction. Got it? He's not seeking anything from this world. If we become the beneficiary of our activities, we get reactions. Good or bad, right? If we are the enjoyer, we get reactions. But when we act like Krishna is the enjoyer, then we also undergo akarma where we don't get reactions. So similarly, because Krishna is not seeking anything from this world, even though he creates and annihilates everything, he's just doing it as a matter of duty. Or doing as a neutral, you know, as a job. Because he has to do it to facilitate some living entities. That's why he doesn't get any reactions. So that's a very nice, important thing you should remember, recollect, you can write down. Because Krishna doesn't seek anything from this world, he doesn't get any reactions. He doesn't need, he doesn't want anything from this world, anything material, because it's full of opulence. You know, he has everything, whatever he needs. Okay, so
I agree he's beyond this. But everything is created by his will only, right? That doesn't mean that he should get reactions.
At the same time, not even a blade of the grass moves without his will. Yes. That's true.
And this entire universe is created only by his will.
Yes.
So he's the cause of everything, right?
He's the cause of everything, but he's not, what to say, he's not partial in that sense. He's neutral.
We were again created for his enjoyment, right?
We are created for his... We are created for his enjoyment. But this material world, it happens as an automaton. Like, you know, set of rules and things are happening by, it's not like he's particularly involved in a particular, say, you know, this living entity take this form, this living entity next time, you know, you take this. He's not involved with, in the sense of self-interest. So this is all happening because of the wills of the living entity and according to the karma, this is all happening. But the rules and the whole system he created. It's like he created the infrastructure and inside things are happening. So he is not, that's why, you know, Prabhupada gives the analogy here of a high court judge. No. No, we can see that example. One should not think in this connection
that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no engagement. In the spiritual world, he is always engaged. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated, he is always involved in his eternal, blissful spiritual activities. But he has nothing to do with these material activities.
Okay, so one thing is, so here he says namam karmani, namam tani karmani, na karmani, basically, you know, I don't have any activities. So usually Mayavadis, how they interpret is, they, it basically is inactive, or rather he doesn't have any senses, where elsewhere Krishna is declared as nirguna. Nirguna means they think, you know, he doesn't have any qualities, or what is that form? Nirakar. Nirakar means they say he doesn't have any form. But Prabhupada clarifies, it means he doesn't have material form, he doesn't have material activities, he doesn't have material qualities. That's the point. Doesn't mean he doesn't have any engagement. He has all blissful activities in his spiritual world. So that's the first point. Then how do material activities get carried out? That's given later on. And material activities are being carried on?
Are being carried on by his different potencies. The Lord is always neutral in the material activities of the created world. This neutrality is mentioned here in the word Udasinavati. Although he has control of every minute detail of material activities, he is sitting as if neutral.
This is the same point you are saying. He has control of every detail, minute detail, but still he is neutral. The example is very nice.
The example can be given of a high court judge sitting on his bench. By his order, so many things are happening. Someone is being hanged, someone is being put into jail, someone is awarded a huge amount of wealth. But still, he is neutral. He has nothing to do with all that gain and loss. Similarly, the Lord is always neutral, although he has his hand in every sphere of activity.
Yeah, you can pause there. So without the judge's decision, nothing is happening. you know, he's making, so people can say, you know, let's blame the judge, right? He made him hang, or, you know, it's not like, you know, it's his relative, so he made him, you know, it's not partial. He's just executing according to the rules, courts, you know, whatever the discussions the lawyers have according to the law book rules. He's making a decision. He doesn't have any particular interest in a particular result, outcome. So that's why he is not to be blamed. Right? Only foolish people blame the judge. But otherwise, he is not supposed to be blamed because he is neutral. Even though without him, nothing will happen. Right? It's very clear, very nice example, right? Yeah. Any other examples somebody can think of? Like maybe, you know, parents and children also we can think. Father provides everything for two children, let's say, you know, same amount of facilities, everything. But based on how they respond, the results will come differently. It's not like father is saying, you know, this particular son, you go to, you know, you don't provide proper, rather, you know, he is cursing this particular boy that, you know, his future gets failure. Or rather, he is, you know, blessing this particular boy that he is successful. Right? It's all happening because of their, how they reciprocate, how they take it, and how they work on the resources they got.
There is another example.
Yeah, teacher student. Okay, yeah. Who is the Prabhu Mataji? Garima. Yeah, please tell.
Yeah, Mataji. So, students get marks or, you know, results, fail or pass on the basis of how they perform.
Oh.
And teachers, they mark the papers and everything, but they are not affected by the results of the students.
Yeah.
It's the student's performance that leads to their results.
Yeah, that's very nice, right? Good
teachers
point.
Are unaffected by their performance.
Yeah, we cannot say suddenly, you know, I got 100 and, you know, maybe, you know, this teacher is very partial, you know, maybe that Mataji goes, you know, gives a lot of prasadam to Mataji. So that's why she got good grades, you know. It's not like that, right? So it's, yeah, hopefully it's not like that. So, yeah, it's a good point. You were saying something?
There's an example of a gardener having so many different kinds of plants. He waters them the same, but the fruits are all different. Coconut gives everything, rose is giving this thing, everything. But the water is the same. The
exactly. So based on the seed, the result is different. So similarly, all our seeds are different based on the karma, everything. The results are different. But the whole environment is uniform for everyone. Okay. Okay, so then next he explains how he is neutral then, you know, how then everything he is only doing but still he is saying is neutral. How does it work? Again he clarifies, again his relationship with this material nature. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena kaunteya jagat viparivartate. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So again, is declaring this material nature is his energy, is working under his direction. So that's how it's happening. That's how it's producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, the manifestation is created, annihilated. So not under directly I am doing it. No, I have delegated everything to my material energy and material energy is doing it. So I am not anywhere directly related to all of this. So, you know, I am neutral. Okay, so...
Annihilated, it is said that we are all going to the body of...
Yeah, Mahavishnu.
Yeah.
So, what is question?
But again, he is involved there, right?
No, involved means he expands himself as Mahavishnu to facilitate the whole thing. It's not like, you know, he consciously decides, kind of Brahma, this person goes to spiritual world, but this person comes to me. He's not involved in that, you know, he's not changing the decisions unless it's devotees. Only devotees he involves. So, we'll read from, you know, 8th, huh? Yeah, somebody is crying. Yeah. Some, you know, we can read from 8th line like that. Because he glances over material nature. 8th or 10th or 15th line. It's in the, yeah.
Because he glances over material nature, there is undoubtedly activity on the part of the Supreme Lord.
but he has nothing to do with the manifestation of the material world directly. This example is given in the Smriti.
Mm.
When there is a fragrant flower before someone, the fragrance is touched by the smelling power of the person. Yet the smelling and the flower are detached from one another. There is a similar connection between the material world and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, he has nothing to do with this material world, but he creates by his glance and ordains. In summary, material nature, without the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Personality is detached from all material activities.
The same thing again, no? So what is Krishna's role in this material creation? He just glances. Because of that, the seeds or the living entities enter into the pradhan or mother material nature, and then she gets agitated and living entities are born. Like how semen enters into the mother womb, and the embryo starts growing. Same thing. So his glance is called Shambhu Shakti. So basically Shiva's wife is Parvati. Parvati is nothing but material nature, right? So Shiva and Parvati unite to create this material creation. The Shambhu Shakti is called Shiva. But Krishna doesn't touch the material energy directly. His Shakti. But again, Shakti is non-different from him. So without him, nothing happens. But at the same time, he's not directly involved. So the example is given of fragrant flower. So if fragrant flower is in front of us, and somebody is smelling, one can say one is touching the flower. But he's not really touching the flower because he's not physically touching, but he's touching the flower by smelling it. So similarly, Lord doesn't touch the material nature, but he touches through his glance. Then, so last two lines, Prabhupada summarizes everything. In summary, material nature without the superintendence of the Supreme Lord cannot do anything. So see, we cannot even conclude that material nature is on its own is doing everything. That's also wrong. So without Supreme Lord, he cannot do. But at the same time, because Krishna is involved, we cannot say Krishna is bound by material activities. See, it's basically, Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Yet the Supreme Lord is detached from all material activities. This concept is little bit very, very intricate actually. Jiva Goswami, he wrote like Sandarbhas to explain this Achintya Bheda Bheda philosophy, very in detail. Krishna is, all, especially he wanted to declare all his Krishna's expansions in the spiritual world are made of spiritual energy. Otherwise, by logic, what will happen is we can conclude that Krishna is also made of matter. Unless his whole abode and all his energies are spiritual, it cannot work. The philosophy, he was trying to prove everything actually. So all the spiritual energy, everything that's made of spiritual energy, but this also is expansion, but this is inferior energy. This is made of material energy. But still, it's his inferior energy. It's okay or it's confusing?
I'm trying to put into words because it requires something to settle down. So, still thinking about it. It's like I understood, but I don't think.
Basically, I'm trying to think of another examples. Like chemical reactions we do, right? Two things we bring together and we form a product, right? There is a catalyst.
Correct.
Catalyst is very important for that reaction to take place.
Yeah.
But without catalyst, nothing will happen. But at the same time, it's not the main element, right?
And it's unaffected.
Yeah, it's unaffected, right? I don't know what happens. Yeah.
No, the catalyst.
Unaffected? Okay. So then the whole reaction doesn't take place without the catalyst. At the same time, it's not affected. So I think somewhat it may help you understand this. So he is not, one thing to understand is not materially affected by anything. Another thing Prabhupada says, for Krishna there is nothing called matter and spirit. Everything is spirit for him. Why there is matter and spirit is, when we try to enjoy, it becomes material. Otherwise it becomes spiritual, right? So for him, everything is for his enjoyment only.
So
for him, there is no differentiation actually. But still, he doesn't involve so much with the material energy. When he comes also, he doesn't even touch the material energy. He comes in his own transcendental form. He doesn't take a material body. know, he, I don't know how he walks in the land of Vrindavan and all, but yeah, still we have the footsteps and all those things, but it's all transcendental, it's all spiritual now. Yeah. It's okay or? Yeah.
We have his footsteps there, Mataji?
Yeah, at least there is a Shila, Govardhan Shila. Yeah, in Govardhan. Govardhan also there is footstep there, people do Abhishek and all, but there is another place. There is, I don't know, some temple, Jiva Goswami's temple or some temple. There is a Shila with Krishna's lotus feet and a flute mark or something. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives this, saying, Sanatana Goswami, even till elderly age, he takes a vow to take Govardhan Parikrama every day. Then he says, Mahaprabhu, you are so elderly, you cannot do, you know, don't trouble yourself like this. Then he said, no, my sickness is actually that I am not able to do Parikrama, otherwise I am okay. But still, then he says, okay, take this Govardhan Shila, where you have Krishna's mark and flute mark. You take this and it's equivalent to Govardhan. So you take Parikrama of this four times, is equivalent to taking Govardhan Parikrama. So he says like that, and that Shila is there in the temple, and devotees go, and whoever doesn't, cannot do Parikrama, they, some, you know, whenever, you know, sometimes with kids they cannot do, they take Parikrama of that temple for four times. Like, that's a blessing, it's not different from Govardhan. So the mark is there. Yeah. Text number 11. So now the question is, if Krishna is such a glorious personality where, you know, he creates all this creation but yet is not affected, then why don't people respect Krishna? So Krishna is telling, you know, who are the people who don't respect and declares them as fools. Avajananti mamudha tavnishim tanumashritam parambhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme lord of all that be. So why people don't respect is, when he comes in his human form, they think he is one of us. He is like one of us. Because they don't know his transcendental nature as the supreme lord of all that be. Even though he appears to be human, he is actually supreme lord. So that's why Krishna calls them fools. So this word muda is also used in earlier, right? Where Krishna talks about four kinds of people who don't surrender. What is that verse? Did we memorize this? Namam drishkritino muda prapadyante naram. Nobody knows this verse. That verse, namam drishkritino muda prapadyante, 7.15. Prapadyante naradama asuram bhavam ashrita manish... Prapadyante naradama maya apaharta jnana asuram bhavam ashrita. Four kinds of people who do not surrender, right? Muda is a foolish, grossly foolish person. So here also, Muda is foolish person. Only foolish people think that Krishna is one of us when he descends.
Yes, that's pleasing human beings, Mataji. He comes, they say, okay, he comes and he's a man. They don't come, why is he sitting there not coming at all? So there's no...
Yeah, Krishna also, you know, that tells us, actually, when I heard this somewhere, this realization I had, or somebody shared this in the class, that, you know, even Krishna is not excused of criticism. You know, we think, you know, why people, I'm doing everything good, sincerely, nicely, you know, why people are criticizing me. You know, we think like that, right? Even God himself had to face criticism. You know, so imagine in our state, that's the nature of this world, basically, you know. That's what you should expect from the world. Honor, dishonor, that's why Krishna says in Arjuna, right? Matra sparshastu konteya, just tolerate. Honor, dishonor, dualities, just tolerate. Do your duty and just go on. So, this is a very lengthy purport. Srila Prabhupada covers many points, so we'll try to read as much. Okay, first paragraph.
Verses in this chapter, it is clear that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although appearing like a human being, is not a common man. The Personality of Godhead, who conducts the creation, maintenance and annihilation of the complete cosmic manifestation, cannot be a human being. Yet there are many foolish men who consider Krishna to be merely a powerful man and nothing more. Actually, he is original Supreme Personality, as is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna. He is the Supreme Lord.
We can pause there. So here Prabhupada is establishing some facts to make us understand how he is not a common human being. Why a person who conducts his creation, maintenance, annihilation cannot be a normal human being. You know, we cannot say he is like one of us. But people, they cannot consider that. But that's why they are fools. So, but you know, we can help ourselves. You know, if at all we have any doubt that Krishna is an ordinary human being, this should help us, you know, to remove that doubts. Then, next paragraph, Prabhupada talks that even when he descends, he doesn't come in the material form like how we all come. He comes in his original Sachidananda form, transcendental form. So that's what we'll read in third paragraph. Material bodies cannot perform.
Material bodies cannot perform the wonderful acts described in previous verses. His body is eternal, blissful and full of knowledge. Although he is not a common man, the foolish deride him and consider him to be a man. His body is called here Manusim because he is acting just like a man. A friend of Arjuna's, a politician involved in the battle of Kurukshetra. In so many ways, he is acting just like an ordinary man. But actually, his body is Sachidananda Vigraha.
Eternal bliss and knowledge absolute.
Eternal bliss and knowledge absolute. This is confirmed in the Vedic language also. Sachit Ananda Rupaya Krishnaya. I offer my obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, who is the eternal blissful form of knowledge.
We can pause there. So here again Prabhupada is saying, with this material body we cannot perform such wonderful acts. So that means by logic his body is transcendental. So, you know, he acted like a normal human being by all these activities. Even Arjuna says in 11th chapter, when he sees the universal form, he says, you know, this ghastly form is, you know, very, very fearsome, you know, the form. And then, your Prabhu is looking for, oh, they went to swimming pool. He understood or no? Check.
Swimming pool.
Cabana. So, what was he saying? Arjuna also, yeah. He, ghastly form, he gets very scared. Then he understood and he accepts Krishna in this mood of awe and reverence. Then he starts saying, you know, okay, as thinking you as my friend, I joked with you. I laid on the same bed with you and I made so many jokes with you. Please, you know, forgive me. Because when the mood comes, then automatically, you know, the awe and reverence, the loving relationship, intimacy goes away. So like that, you know, he, Arjuna also felt he was like his close friend and all those things, right? So he acted like that. But actually, never, you know, only pure devotees could understand that he was always the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even Duryodhana, you know, I was reading Mahabharata where they were saying, like somebody in the Battle of Kurukshetra, in one of the days, somebody was explaining, as Duryodhana was losing the war, somebody was coming and explaining to Duryodhana that, you know, Krishna is not an ordinary man. He is Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because of this, he was on that side. So they are going to definitely win. You know, better you stop it or, you know, stop this whole war. And he was almost convinced because many of his party members were killed. Then he started thinking, oh, maybe for a moment that, you know, maybe he is Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that time, he started paying obeisances for some time, you know. What if he is Supreme Personality of Godhead? Maybe I should get some credit, right? Because all the time I am, you know, offending him, all those things. What if really he is Supreme Personality of Godhead? Let me do some, you know, puja for him, you know, some worship. He starts thinking like that and he sleeps for the day, for the night actually. That's what is described. No, so that's what Radhanath Maharaj also tells in his lecture, that even if you see physically Krishna, that's not sufficient, you know. Krishna is revealed through our devotion. Now, so many people saw Krishna, literally, but they couldn't really see Krishna in the real sense, you know, that Krishna as he is. They saw him like ordinary human being. They saw him as, because of their own, because they don't lack, they don't have the devotion, Krishna doesn't reveal himself. So only for pure devotees, Krishna reveals himself. Okay, so then continuing further, next two paragraph, nor do they know the appearance of Supreme Personality of Godhead is a manifestation of his internal energy. Anybody, Garima, can you read? It's the next paragraph after this. Nor do they know that the appearance of Supreme Lord,
where is it, Mataji?
Next paragraph.
After that month.
After that, next paragraph.
390,
last
paragraph.
Last paragraph.
No, last paragraph.
Okay, okay. Okay, got it. Nor do they know that the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this material world is a manifestation of his internal energy. He is the master of the material energy. As has been explained in several places, he claims that the material energy, although very powerful, is under his control, and whoever surrenders unto him can get out of the control of this material energy. If a soul surrendered to Krishna can get out of the influence of material energy, then how can the Supreme Lord, who conducts the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the whole cosmic nature, have a material body like us? So this conception of Krishna is complete.
We can pause there. Garima, thank you.
Okay.
So this is a very nice point. See this point. So if a soul surrendered to Krishna can get out of the clutches of material energy, then how can he have material body and how can he be influenced by material energy? Very simple logic, right? So, but people say Krishna is just a man in mode of goodness. He is also under the influence of material energy. And you know, when we also become liberated, we'll also realize that, you know, it's actually impersonal Brahman, all this Mayavadi philosophy. That's what Prabhupada is trying to defeat in this elaborate purport. But Krishna, very simple, that Krishna cannot have material body like us. So the pure devotees accept this. So I will read the last four lines of this paragraph. Those who are pure devotees accept this, that you know Krishna is transcendental, for they know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, they completely surrender unto Him and engage in Krishna consciousness, devotional service of the Lord. So this is what is the result of accepting this. You know, why are we discussing so much that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Now, what is it for us? One is it accepting in theory. What is it for us is that it should invoke us for complete surrender. That, you know, he is the master of this material energy. So, he is capable of delivering him from these clutches. So, I want to take shelter of him. So, that conviction should become stronger. When we hear and accept with faith that Krishna is the master of material energy and he is the one made of spiritual potencies and he is the one who comes in this transcendental form. When we know that, pure devotees accept it with faith and they completely surrender and engage fully in service, because they feel, you know, what's the use then? Let me serve the master rather than serving this energy which is going to fool me anyway, right? And I know perfectly sure that this master is going to take care of me. He's already, so many things are happening just by his will, so he has so much capability of taking care of me, right? So why can't we have the faith? So why we don't have the faith? So we'll read the next paragraph also, next to next paragraph. Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with Balarama. Okay, this is a very nice verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. The earlier 2-3 lines, before to the verse. In Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, when the sages headed by Shaunaka inquired about activities of Krishna, we read this, right, in Bhagavatam. They declared that Lord Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with Balarama, played like a human being. And so masked, he performed many superhuman acts. So there also Bhagavatam, it is said, like Balarama, both of them, they acted like human being, but they performed superhuman acts. So we can read the rest of the paragraph, purport. Lord's appearance.
The Lord's appearance. The Lord's appearance as a man bewildered the foolish. No human being could perform the wonderful acts that Krishna performed while he was present on this earth. When Krishna appeared before his father and mother, Vasudeva and Devaki, he appeared with four hands, but after the prayers of the parents, he transformed himself into an ordinary child. As stated in the Bhagavatam 10.3.46, Bhavuva
Prakrita Shishu.
He became just like an ordinary child, an ordinary human being. Now, here again, it is indicated that the Lord's appearance as an ordinary human being is one of the features of his transcendental body. In the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita also, it is stated that Arjuna prayed to see Krishna's form of four hands.
Tenaiva rupena chaturbhujena.
After revealing this form, Krishna, when
petition.
Petitioned by Arjuna, again assumed his original human life. Manusham Rupam.
Manusham Rupam.
These different features of the Supreme Lord are certainly not those of an ordinary human being.
Yeah, so some more points to elaborate that he is supreme is that when he appeared with four hands, and when requested by Devaki, he took the normal two-handed form. And similarly, Arjuna also asked Krishna to show the four-handed form, so he showed it. And when he said, you know, I don't want it, he showed the normal form. So how can an ordinary human being manifest four hands and again unmanifest and manifest and manifest? So that itself shows that he is not an ordinary human being. And also his superhuman acts he performed when he is born, we can all share like some of brainstorm some of the activities, extraordinary activities Krishna performed when he came, which are like, you know, unmatchable. Lifting Govardhan Hill when he is 7 years with his pinky.
Dancing
right?
Kalia.
Dancing on Kalia snake. Then?
This morning I was reading this shloka with Chinmayi and the Tarani were sharing. I was asking them what are the different things what we can do and only Krishna can do. And they were telling lots of points like Krishna created the whole universe and I would go over them and that Brahma Vimocha Leela. And all kind of leelas they were doing.
Yeah, killing Krishna, killing demons.
Krishna killing demons. Lots of other points which I never thought of. Thinking, but they said lots of things. And Chinmay was saying that sun and moon can be our eyes, but they are the eyes of Krishna.
Oh, very nice. See, so nice.
In this way, even the kids are like totally in that. I was feeling happy that they know more than me.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's the role of a teacher. So you'll realize that they know more than you. That's what happens when you teach. Yeah. So then some more other pastimes. Yeah, same thing, you know. Krishna, Brahma also got bewildered that he's an ordinary human being, right? After killing Agasura, he saw Krishna is holding food in his left hand and he's playing with his friends. So he said, like, oh, how can he be Supreme Lord? No, he's not. Then he tried to play a trick with him and he found out, you know, what happens. Then even...
Fruit seller. I was thinking about the fruit seller.
So yeah, then he got jewels in the basket, right? Yeah. And even Yasudama also, right?
Sudama, that is this. See, everybody else, they're saying in the before birth they were this, after birth they were this, all that. Sudama, nothing. He just saw him, considered him everything, and in return what the Lord gave
Then other extraordinary thing is Krishna married 16,108 queens and he gave so many palaces and expanded himself into all these palaces. And you know, these are all extraordinary feats which nobody can match. So whenever somebody claims, you know, when Prabhupada hears that somebody says, you know, I'm Krishna, I'm expansion of Vishnu, all this, Prabhupada says, always, you know, challenges them. Okay, if you say you're Krishna, okay, not just dancing with gopis in Rasa Leela, why don't you lift Govardhan Hill? Why don't you marry so many wives and maintain them, you know? Maintaining one wife is so difficult in Kali Yuga. No, so many wives, you know, taking care of them. So, you know, we can, at least, you know, theoretically we should accept. Prabhupada said actually very nicely, to understand Bhagavad Gita properly, from the beginning, you should at least theoretically accept Krishna as Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, you know, when we talk about it, oh, we think he's my friend, he's speaking, you know, same thing, right? What is the same? We see, right? We talked in our class also. When we have to receive water, when we have to receive water in a container, it has to come from a higher platform, right? You cannot put from down to up like this, unless, you know, there is some, you know, like you do some, you throw up and magic trick you do. Right, so it has to come from, so when we have to receive knowledge from, you know, higher authorities or from Krishna, we have to place ourselves humbly in front of them. If we think ourselves equal to them or like that, you know, it just goes from here and goes there, but we don't, it doesn't apply to the heart. So like that, similarly Krishna, we have to accept him as Supreme Personality of Godhead in order to really think that, oh no, oh, he's telling me something which I need to apply in my life, I need to transform my life. Anything you want to share, Garima or Prabha Mataji?
No, Mataji. It's the only thing is Krishna, when he came, he did many things which was which another person cannot do. It's so every action of his.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so we'll read last six lines in the last paragraph. A perfect devotee in Krishna consciousness know that it's in the middle of the line. Although the personalist and impersonalist, yeah.
A perfect devotee in a Krishna consciousness knows that although Krishna is the supreme personality, he is all pervading. As confirmed in the Gopa Samhita, although his personal abode is Goloka Vrindavan and he is always staying there, by his different manifestations of energy and by his plenary expansions, he is present everywhere in all parts of the material and spiritual creation.
Mm. So even the supreme personality, still at the same time, he is present. We can see his presence through his expansions and his Paramatma form and its energies. Okay, so we'll go to the next verse, text number 12. So here Krishna talks about then what happens, what's the destination of those who deride Krishna as an ordinary human being. Now what happens, you know, are they excused or are they, you know, what is the destination, what happens to them? So let's see, you know, it's going to be terrible. Mugasha moga karmano moga jnana vichetasa rakshasim asurim chaiva prakrutim mohinim shrita. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities and the culture of knowledge are all defeated. So what happens to the people who think Krishna is an ordinary human being and deride him? You know, basically, they say there are two types of offenses. Either we elevate ourselves to be equal to God, that's also atheism. Or you bring the God back to your level, that's also atheism. Right? Same thing. So same thing, you know, if you bring God to your level and say it's ordinary human being, it's atheism. What happens is, they get bewildered and they get attracted to these views again and again, you know, atheistic views. And because of that, everything will be failure. If they want liberation due to Ashtanga Yoga, or they want, you know, fruitive activities or go to heavenly planets due to Karma Kanda, or they want to cultivate Jnana in Jnana Yoga, all of them, the results will be, they cannot get results. Because in everything, bhakti has to be there. But bhakti can be there only when we accept Krishna as Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, all the results will be failure. So whatever we attempt, in any case, if the concept of Krishna is wrong, it's a failure. It applies even in our practical devotional life also. If you don't have proper conviction that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead, Prabhupada says, you know, we can also not succeed. So let's read this first three lines. There are many devotees who assume themselves.
There are many devotees who assume themselves to be Krishna consciousness and devotional service, but it hard do not accept Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the absolute truth. For them, the fruit of devotional service, going back to Godhead, will never be tested.
Yeah, so he's applying even to devotees. So even devotees, so-called devotees, if at the heart we don't accept Krishna as Supreme Personality of Godhead, then they cannot go back to God.
Similarly, those...
No, we can pause it. Maybe 3-4 lines down. In other words, persons who mock Krishna, now why they have to go through this atheistic destinations? That's explained by Prabhupada.
In other words, persons who mock Krishna are to be understood to be demonic and atheistic. As described in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, such demonic miscreants never surrender to Krishna. Therefore, their mental speculation to arrive at the absolute truth bring them to the false conclusion that the ordinarily living entity and Krishna are one and the same. With such a false conviction, they think that the body of any human being is now simply covered by material nature, and that as soon as one is liberated from material body, there is no difference between God and himself. This attempt to become one with Krishna will be baffled because of delusion. Such atheistic and demonic cultivation of spiritual knowledge is always futile. This is the indication of these words. For such persons, cultivation of knowledge in the Vedic literature like Vedanta Sutra and Upanishad is always better.
Mm. So the question is, somebody may say, you know, is Krishna very cruel? So somebody is deriding Krishna, that, you know, he doesn't have a form, transcendental form, he is like ordinary man, then they are created in a destination which are very unfavorable, right? You know, they are later on Krishna says, you have to go through, you know, hellish planets, or you have to, you know, all this Patala Loka, that's where they will reside. That's what, and you will go through, you know, non-human forms. That's what you have to go through because you have your atheistic views. Then does that mean it's a punishment kind of, you know, oh, you don't honor me, so I will curse you like that. Is it like Krishna is taking revenge? Right? Somebody may think like that, right? Oh, I'm not regarding Krishna, so he's kind of, you know, is he retaliating? Is he, you know, taking revenge? Now the thing is, this is also Lord's mercy. It's also Lord's love. Because that person wants to be in that disposition towards the Lord. That, you know, I want to deny the Lord, I want to defy the Lord. So Krishna creates appropriate situation where he can favorably do that. Now by, so that his atheistic views can be more and more cultivated. So he creates appropriate environment, bodies and situation where he can get that situation.
I was thinking of the...
And one other thing is still love, because a father, when a child does a mischief, he punishes him out of love. It doesn't mean father is partial, right? That, you know, he's partial to this child. It's also out of love. The punishment of the child is also out of love. So similarly, by punishing these particular living entities to go to a particular hellish planet, it's also out of love, so that they can rectify their mistake and come back to the proper position.
Is it a punishment to rectify, or is it a punishment, like you said, that to facilitate what their thought process is, right? So what is it? I think the punishment, I didn't understand how it is facilitating.
Yeah, it's facilitating because, you know, sometimes it creates an environment. For example, you know, if I have atheistic views, you can get the friends who are atheistic. Or, you know, you have the desire to defy the Lord, you will remove in that circles. Right? It's not like purposefully he will make you mix with devotees all the time so that, you know, you get defeated. There is no way you can cultivate that atheism. Right? He will facilitate that desire to the extent it's karmically possible. Right? Like, for example, Krishna Prabhupada says, if I want to become a drunkard, Krishna will give direction for the person who wants to be drunkard to go to this bar, you know, meet these people, make friendship with such people and meet with them often so that he can eventually become drunkard. The desire will be fulfilled. So if I have slight inclination for atheism, then somehow Krishna will put me in association of such people that can increase if I really have the desire. But if you have slight sincere desire to serve Krishna because of Ajnata Sukriti or something, then somehow, you know, Krishna will put us in association of devotees that can also fan. So it's all about our desire. You know, that makes it very dangerous, actually, you know. Because these desires are coming from previous lives where we don't know, we don't have control. So now I have to face the reactions, you know, what to do, you know. It's, well, I wish Krishna takes away our desires. being set to the clean slate. So we can desire properly.
I was thinking, you were asking how it is a punishment, right, Mataji? I was thinking of this example some lecturer was giving, right? So a mother, when she's walking with the child, some bully just goes through between them.
Oh.
He turns around and yells at that man, look at that buffalo.
Mother, can you repeat the question?
A question? What question? Oh, the question I gave?
Yeah.
1 second. So the question is like, basically how, if suppose, you know, do people say that because Krishna, whoever defy Krishna, Krishna is going to give them destination of hellish destination and all, right? Very not so favorable outcome for them. Does that mean Krishna is giving punishment, or, you know, he is retaliating against them, or he is personally taking revenge? You got the question?
Yes.
Yeah. So the point answer I was telling is that it's also out of love, because if a child is doing mischievous, parents sometimes chastise the child out of love so that the child will learn the mistake. Right? So it's also Krishna's love for these people, so they can rectify their propensity. And Swami Prabhu is adding to that some other example.
So just like when a mother is going with a child, with her child, a man just, you know, bullies through or pushes through, she'll turn around and yell at the man, it's like going like a buffalo. He's grown so far, but no brains. The same mother, you know, a Baptist back in India, she'll try to feed medicine or castor oil, right? She'll try to hold the child between her knees, to hold the neck, and, you know, do something, hold its nose. The father, if he comes and sees, it's like, why are you trying to kill the child? But what is she doing? She's doing for the wrong term of good. So at that time, it might seem like a punishment. Overall, it's the good of the child.
Oh, very nice. Oh, very good. Yeah, very good point.
Somebody's example. I'm just...
Yeah, very nice. Yeah. Many times, sometimes, you know, husbands don't understand why wife shouts at the child. Huh? Yeah, exactly. Prabhu always tells, you know, why are you shouting? And sometimes I act, you know, very panicky in some situation. Because I know what's going to come if I don't address at that particular moment, then I freak out. He says, why are you shouting like this? You know, what's going to happen? But it's all, then I feel, you know, because the intent is love, at least hopefully it's love, then these things are all, you know, expressions of love. No, elsewhere it's given like, you know, there are rasas, right? There are 5 primary rasas. Like we have Vatsalya, Madhurya, the 5 primary rasas. And there are total 12 rasas, other 7 secondary rasas. The secondary rasas are fear, anger, you know, bewilderment. All these things are secondary rasas. Sometimes these secondary rasas are manifested to facilitate the primary rasa. You know, see, for example, Radharani, primary rasa with Krishna is out of love, Madhurya rasa. But mainly, most of the time, she is in anger with Krishna. Now that, you know, you left me and went. But we cannot say anger means, oh, something wrong, they don't have love, right? That anger is out of love. So it's like that. Okay, I don't know, we went somewhere else. But text number, I don't know, 13, should we do? Yeah, we just have to read one paragraph, so let's do this. Mahatmanastu maam partha daivim prakriti maashrita vajanti ananya manaso jnatva bhutadim avyayam. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the... So now what happens to the great souls who accept Krishna as Supreme Personality of Godhead? They are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So seems like partiality. The people who don't accept Krishna, they are, you know, they are going to be, they, all the things are going to be failure. But who accept Krishna, they are under protection of divine nature, and they engage in devotional service and accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So let's read the last paragraph where Prabhupada defines what is this Mahatma. The Mahatma does not.
There is no doubt about it. Such a Mahatma or a great soul develops through association with other Mahatma, pure devotees. Pure devotees are not even attracted by Krishna's other creatures, such as the 4-armed Mahavishnu. They are simply attracted by the 2-armed form of Krishna. They are not attracted to other forms of Krishna, nor are they concerned with any form of a demigod or of a human being. They meditate only upon Krishna in Krishna consciousness. They are always engaged in the unserving service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. So then these Mahatmas, what is the characteristics of Mahatmas? So Mahatmas, they engage in Krishna consciousness always. And how the Mahatmas are formed? By association of pure devotees or other Mahatmas. And other thing Prabhupada is specifying, that these Mahatmas are not attracted to other features of the Lord, not even other forms of the Lord. That's why, you know, it may feel like, they say usually, you know, Krishna consciousness or ISKCON devotees are fanatic. They want only Krishna, you know, they don't accept other forms. But love is fanatic, right? When you love a particular person, let's say, you know, college, I don't know how many of us have experienced that love, right? In college, there's so many boys or girls will be there, but one particular person you find attractive. People will say, you know, he's a crazy guy, or, you know, he doesn't comb his hair, he doesn't take bath, but still doesn't matter, love is blind. Doesn't matter. You know, he's the one for me, right? So, like that, you know, we don't want to choose, see anybody else, right? Only that person. It's like that. So, you know, somehow these devotees have that natural attraction towards the two-handed form, especially there are so many forms of Krishna, right? Still, only Shyamasundar form. In most of us, Shyamasundar form of Krishna. that they don't want to Goloka, you know, primary form of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, Radha Shyam Sundar, that they want to only serve that form of the Lord and serve Him in that way. That's why, you know, especially Prabhupada says in devotees in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's parampara, like all of us, the main rasa is actually Madhurya rasa. The followers of Mahaprabhu, it said mostly they are cultivating Madhurya rasa, because that's what Mahaprabhu came to give us. But that's all will be revealed later on, you know. We cannot imitate like that, you know, Sahajiyas and all. So they are always engaged in unswerving service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness, Mahatmas. So if we have to call ourselves Mahatmas or, you know, Sadhus, then we should be unswerving service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. Now next verse will be very interesting, which we'll cover next class. What are the activities of these Mahatmas? You know, what do they do? I'll read the translation. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me without devotion. So these are the qualities they do. They always chant Krishna's glories. They always endeavor with great determination, keep bowing down before Krishna. They perpetually worship him with devotion. These are the activities of Mahatmas. So then, then Krishna takes to a different topic afterwards. We can stop it here. Any questions or comments finally? Prabhu Mataji, Gauri Mataji, you want to share or add something?
No, Mataji.
Okay. Anybody?
I don't know whether this is a good point or not, but if I think, like, I got this thought, like, we can also bear lots of things for 1 second, right? So this is all Krishna's 1 second, then he can bear anything, right?
Yeah,
that's
okay. So you're saying even one lifetime he goes to atheistic planets or something like that, it doesn't matter to him, you're saying?
No. And he's neutral to everyone. He's not partial.
Yeah.
So 1 second we can also be neutral.
Yeah, we'll not get affected. We'll not react, you're saying.
Yeah.
If something happens for a long time, we may react.
Yeah.
No, that's in one way it's a good thought, but in another way it's saying, like, you know, he's affected, but potentially situation is not that, you know, he can get affected. That's little bit wrong. So, you know, he, in any case, he doesn't get affected. He's not bothered with the material nature, anything. Yeah.
Mataji, I have a different question about last class. So, after the day of the Brahma, what happens? It's not complete annihilation.
Right? It's partial annihilation.
So, what exactly?
So, basically, there are 14 planetary systems within the stem of the lotus, right, where Brahma resides on top. 14 planetary systems. So there are, like, you know, lower planet, there are like three types. Bhu, Bhuva, Swa, they say, right?
Mm-hmm.
Patala, like, you know, lower planets, middle planets and upper planetary system. Three types, they say. So topmost, the 14 planetary descriptions will be there. You know, we can get the names also. Like, you know, I think we remembered for the exam, we forgot already. So, you know, Atala, Patala, Sutala, Rasatala, Talatala, Patala, Bhu, Bhuva, Swaha, then, you know, top Swargaloka, Brahmaloka, Swarga. Yeah, okay. There are 14. So topmost is the Brahmaloka, you know, Brahmaloka where Brahma resides.
Mm.
So in partial annihilation, at the end of the Brahma, everything except his loka gets annihilated.
Mm.
So he has to wake up. Imagine he has to wake up. Everything is kind of below is destroyed. He has to create everything again. That's whole his job.
But, does it go back to Mahavishnu?
Yeah, so the living entities, they go back to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, who is lying there within the local, resident Vishnu. They go to the resident Vishnu, local Vishnu. After this Brahma gets exhausted, then they go to the final Vishnu, because, you know, there is no, you can logically understand a little bit, right? There is no Vishnu there, so they go to the Mahavishnu. whoever Vishnu is local nearby, they will go. Okay, yeah. That's fine. Okay, we'll end here then. Hare Krishna, all Lord Srila Prabhupada.